Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 89. My name is John. You think you own me, but it won't be like before. You can't control me anymore. Of all the things I've said over the 7+ years of this podcast, this is probably what I've repeated the most. But here it is again, because it's just something I need to keep saying. Collectivism could work. Pick a collective ideology, any collective ideology. Socialism, communism, conservatism, liberalism. Hell, it doesn't even have to be political. Pick a social movement or a religion that qualifies. Christianity, Islam, environmentalism, social justice. Any of them could work. A group of people gets together and all come to an agreement that they will, as a group, all abide under the laws of blank. Insert any of the collectives I just mentioned, or substitute any of your own. Just for the sake of the narrative, let's go with socialism. This theoretical group gets together and all agree to live under socialism. They all agree they will share the fruits of their labors with the group, with those in need getting a little more than those with excess. They all agree to allocate their resources to things that the group decides will best benefit everyone involved. Let's even grant the fairy tale belief held by socialists that all of these people involved in the group are 100% happy with every decision that is made by the collective, and no one tries to skew the resources to their favor or fake a need to get more than they deserve. All these people come to this agreement and they all willingly abide by the rules. Then, a collective could work. But that's not what happens in real life. What happens is this group of collectivists, again, we're plugging in socialists here, but you could easily substitute Christians, environmentalists, or any of the other ones I suggested. This group of collectivists look at their little cadre and decide that since it works so damn well for them, then it's bound to work just as well for everyone else. So they go out and they try to convert people to their cause. They talk about how enriched their lives have been since they shuffled off all those other concerns and gave themselves over to the rule of socialism. And you, yes, you, could be just as happy as they are if you only did the same. And then the problems start. See, all those other concerns that they no longer considered important are still important to people on the outside of their collective. Sure, your story sounds great and all, but I still care about keeping what I have rightfully earned. Nor do I agree with the decisions your socialist collective have made. So, if it's all the same to you, I will politely decline your invitation to join. Not everyone wants to be a socialist. Just because you and your collective like it so much, I'm not willing to surrender myself the way you have. So, the poor collectivists return to their enclave, with perhaps a few new believers, but certainly not as many as their lofty expectations told them there would be. Maybe they try some more membership drives, but they never convince people in the numbers that they want. I mean, darn it, though, they're just so sure it would work if people would just adjust their morality to fit socialism. I mean, why be so selfish? Why not give yourself over to the good of others? Eventually, they decide they can't get people to become socialists on their own. If they can't get people to do it voluntarily, though, maybe they can find a way to make people do things their way. So they go to an agent of force. Now, in ages past, maybe it was a king that they went to, or maybe it was a local warlord who they could persuade to their cause. In these days, in America, they go to somebody in the government, local, state, federal level, whatever their level of aspiration to force others to join. They meet with the staff of a legislator to urge them to persuade a politician to hear their cause and support them. Or maybe they have enough money to hire a professional lobbyist to advocate for them to smooth talk a lot of politicians. Maybe the politician is hesitant to join their cause, but the collectivists promise that politician their vote and support. Or maybe the collectivists just grow their own candidate to rise up in the ranks. Regardless of how, eventually they get enough influence to get the legislators to change the law in favor of their cause. Ah, but here's the sneaky part. The collectivists have learned to not do it all at once. It's too shocking to people. It's too easily rejected. So they start off small, with something that seems reasonable. Say, a small income tax, maybe, I don't know, 3%. But only on the really, really rich people. I mean, nobody likes those rich people anyway. And though they may be rich, they don't have enough votes to match our collective. Then they slowly and subtly nudge the law. Until one day, many years later, people realize how they've been forced into this socialist collective. But what if there's something that works without the aid of the collective? What if government doesn't really need to interfere with the interactions of people? Then you make up a problem or exploit an unpopular aspect of life to give the government an excuse to take control. And then you let unnatural bureaucracy seep in and slowly destroy what you don't like. This is truly a long game. In real life, the socialists have been at this for well over a century, destroying the personal liberty of Americans. But that's how they operate. That's how all collectivists operate. If they can't get people to follow them voluntarily, they'll find a way to force them to do it. Lately, different collectives have resurrected their classic court of public opinion strategy. If it's too difficult in a supposedly free country to get people to conform to their morality, they'll use public shame and backlash to put people in their place. Force is the religion of all collectivism. Forcing individuals to surrender what is rightfully theirs is the morality of the masses. Once more, let me remind you, I picked socialism for this little train of thought. But substitute any of the other ones I mentioned. Environmentalism, Christianity, communism, liberalism, Islam, conservatism, social justice, or plug in one of your own that I didn't think of. In this respect, they are all the same. Each collective wants to control you and force you to follow their version of morality. That's why you get one movement calling for a law to demand marriage be defined as one man and one woman, a subject covered repeatedly in this podcast in the past. That's why you have another movement fighting to keep recreational drug use illegal. Come to think of it, it was a morality movement almost a century ago that caused such drugs to become illegal, just as they had done briefly with alcohol. Recently on social media, there was a frenzy of people trying to shame the rich into giving everyone else health care. Not that they defined who the rich are, nor give any kind of legitimate plan or numbers on how such a scheme would even be possible. Every special interest cabal is out there trying to force everybody else to conform to their rectitude. All collectivist systems will eventually try to use force to make others join. And not one of them, not a goddamn one, cares about anyone who wants to live their life outside of the collective's morality. Want to share your life in a consensual adult agreement with a person of the same gender or multiple people? There's a collectivist group who will fight to prevent you from that natural right. Want to put a potentially mind-altering substance into your body of your own free will? There's a collectivist group who will fight to prevent you from that natural right. Do you not want to be forced to purchase a service that you don't feel you need, or be forced to pay for somebody else's goods and services? There is a collectivist group who will fight to prevent you from that natural right. Collectivists believe it is their right to tell you how to live your life. Your own needs and desires take a back seat to what they believe. Collectivism is homogeny. It demands the sacrifice of individuality. Oh, they'll try to convince you they care about your needs and desires. Oh no, we're protecting you from the consequences of polyamory, or of possible side effects to drug use, or of not being able to afford health care. See, we're doing it all for your own good. You need to be protected. And sometimes that means you need to be protected from yourself. The mantra of the collectivists is to honor and respect individuality. The reality of the collectivists is to destroy individuality. There's a great quote from Ayn Rand. The smallest minority on earth is the individual. Those who deny individual rights cannot claim to be defenders of minorities. See, collectivists all claim to champion rights. What they really mean is they champion their rights. The right to do things they believe in, for their group to be allowed to think and act how they want. Everyone else with any other opposing ideology can be damned. Sadly, that's the way it is in America today. Every little collective fights for their morality, and they'll do it at the expense of the rights of others. So, one collective fights for their morality of a heteromonogamous definition of marriage at the expense of the natural rights of others. Ironically, the popular opinion of the opposition is to force the government to define marriage in their favor. But it still gives the government the power to define marriage instead of giving that right to individuals where it belongs. Another collective fights for the morality to ban what they believe to be dangerous recreational drugs at the expense of others who have the right to make a decision to use or not to use it for themselves. Ironically, the opposition fights for the legalization of drugs, with strict taxation and regulation of their right to use said drugs. They basically allowed a situation where they pay a continuing ransom to the government to have a fraction of their true freedom returned to them. If you support collectivist goals, you cannot say you respect individuality. Now, the collectivists want to force you to pay for my health care. They want everyone into their great socialist pool because they believe they have convinced enough of the American people that that is now the only way to provide health services. There is no denying that the current state of the American healthcare system is bad and getting worse. But the proposed solution by the collectivists is simply more of the same idiocy that brought us to this current deterioration. The Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare, did nothing more than force people to buy insurance. Wow, now more people have health care! Of course they do, if you're going to force people to buy it. Who benefits? Well, the insurance companies, the same businesses that people were complaining about before Obamacare. The legislation basically gave more power and money to the same entities people believe to be the problem. Young people are generally the least likely to be insured. Why? Because they're young and are generally healthy, so they don't feel they need it as much. But now, they are forced to buy it. Since they have to buy it, but are less likely to need it because of their status, their monies go to fund older people who do need it. They are being forced to subsidize health care, just like they are forced to subsidize Social Security. Duh, dumbass. That's how insurance works. And yet, those same people who champion collectivist systems like insurance are the same ones who cry and complain every time their premiums increase. Whether it's healthcare, car insurance, or property insurance, when more people use the system, that means everybody has to put more money in. You're the ones who demanded the system, so you should have thought about the consequences before you forced everyone else into it. But why? Why are we in this mess to begin with? Because long ago, the collectivists got their proverbial foot in the door. They got the government to slowly and incrementally intervene with doctor-patient relationships, with insurance companies, with forcing employers to provide insurance, with the natural commerce and transactions of free people and businesses. Now, I could say this about pretty much anything to do with American society today, but I'll use it for healthcare. You take a look at the problem that government purports to fix, and you will most likely find that the reason they are supposedly fixing it is due to problems that came about from their own previous interference. The government fucked up healthcare. They've been fucking it up slowly and steadily for quite some time now. The dirty little secret is the most recent interference was meant to bring about systemic failure. Barack Obama, long before he became president, and even before he was even in the national spotlight, said in a public interview that if he were given the opportunity, he would plan legislation that would purposely force America into a single-payer healthcare system. In other words, socialized medicine. the same type of system that they have been trying to force down our throats for as long back as I can remember. 20 years ago, it was Hillary Care that was rejected, but they just kept trying until they figured out a way to force it on us. Same shit, different name. And it is designed to fail so that government can step in under the guise of a savior, when in reality, it is merely a ploy to force you to give up more of your rights. And the clamoring for it comes from the collectivists who have convinced enough people of their propaganda. People who believe a wholly false narrative. Thanks to the likes of Obama and Bernie Sanders, who pervert the definition, people believe that health care is a right. According to their rhetoric, if you don't believe that, then you want people to die. And the sick irony is that if you look at socialist systems throughout their history, they have treated people as little more than chattel. But more on that in a moment. If you don't fall in line with their version of morality, they will castigate you for being heartless. You want people who are sick to just wither and die. You want people to continue to suffer in their illness. But they fail to understand the basic concept of rights. Healthcare is a good, as in goods and services. Goods and services cannot be considered rights. Why? Because goods and services are the products of people's labor. And you do not have a right to another person's labor. Therefore, the only moral way to obtain goods and services is through an agreeable trade between the laborer and the consumer. Any party not involved in the transaction that seeks to force the terms of the trade in favor of one side is destroying the natural rights of the other. To force the terms in favor of the laborer is to advocate corporatism by taking away the rights of the consumer. To force the terms in favor of the consumer is to advocate slavery by taking away the rights of the laborer. Now that's a hard concept for a lot of people to understand, but it's true. And it doesn't matter just in the transaction of healthcare, but in any kind of situation where you are taking away what somebody has rightfully earned, just like in, say, taxes. The percentage of somebody else's earnings that you believe should be surrendered to your collectivist philosophy is the percentage to which you support slavery. The answer, then, is not to regulate a market until it suffocates and fails, but rather to get the fuck out of people's way to provide goods and services, in this case healthcare, to the public. The market will not only provide what is needed, but without the shackles of government interference, it can innovate and provide better and evolving options that will be vastly superior to any system currently in place. But that would mean government gives up its power over us. That would mean people being free to think and make decisions for themselves. That would mean the possibility of some people making the wrong choices. But then again, you can't tell me government knows how to make the right choices for us. Regardless, government's current plan to force everyone into their system is wrong. It doesn't matter if the collective is a religion. It doesn't matter if the collective is a political movement. It doesn't matter if the collective is a social movement. It doesn't even matter if the idea from the collective is brilliant and beneficial. Once you cross the line from voluntary agreement to forced compliance, your collective has turned evil. You've become a bureaucracy. You mix that forced compliance in with the state of the American political system, and you have a bureaucracy. The chief duty of bureaucracy is to camouflage from your view the gun pointed at your head by the elitists in power. Oh, no, no, no. Government cares about us. Government has to interfere to force those horrible businesses to sell their products at a price the government thinks is fair. Government has to interfere to force those selfish consumers to give their taxes to businesses that are just too big to fail. One of the biggest lies throughout the history of humanity is that government cares. And right along with it is the lie that government would never do that to us. Let's examine some recent history just in the past few generations. 152,883 American servicemen and women have died since the last time the United States constitutionally declared war. Each one of those deaths come from some military action that should be considered illegal under our own laws. From 1932 to 1972, the United States Health Service carried out a study in Tuskegee, Alabama, on 399 impoverished black men who had syphilis. The researchers repeatedly lied to them over the years, never telling them they had that specific disease, nor did they administer any kind of treatment, because they simply wanted to see what the long-term effects were. By the time the experiment was shut down due to the outcry once the public was made aware, 28 men had died directly due to the disease, and another 100 died of related conditions. 40 wives had been infected, and 19 children born with congenital syphilis. One of the researchers in that study was the team lead in an experiment in Guatemala from 1946 to 1948, where researchers for the United States used prostitutes to infect 700 prison inmates, insane asylum patients, and Guatemalan soldiers with STDs in order to test penicillin. The research wasn't revealed until 2010, and as a result, a lawsuit has been brought up against Johns Hopkins University, Bristol Myers Squibb, and the Rockefeller Foundation, who were all participants in the study. Starting in 1950, and continuing until at least 1969, the Navy sprayed what they believed to be harmless bacteria over San Francisco in order to simulate a biological warfare attack. But it wasn't harmless. Many got sick, and at least one person died due to the Navy's negligence. From 63 to 69, the Army tested nerve gases, toxic chemicals, and biological agents on their own personnel while they were serving on ships, but were not given any notification of the tests. From 42 to 44, the same Army exposed their personnel to mustard gas tests. From 1950 to 1953, the Army sprayed chemicals over six U.S. and Canadian cities just to test dispersal patterns. This is what the government has already done to its citizens that we know of. What could be happening in secret right now with that kind of track record? These are things that have come to light decades after the fact. With that in mind, what the hell makes you think the collectivists and the government give a damn about you? What makes you think you mean anything to them? You are a number. That's all you are. Shortly after you were born, you were assigned a 9-digit number by the federal government. That's how the government recognizes you. That's how you get things from them. That's how you give things to them. That's what you have become to the bureaucracy. They think they know you by a number. They view their statistics and claim that gives them enough information to know who you are. Like any good street hustler, they can probably make some good guesses and get pretty close. But don't be fooled. No matter how well they play the percentages, they will never know you. They can never know you. They can't know what's best for you. They can't know what truly makes you happy. Only you know that. The first step to true freedom is realizing the bureaucracy cannot make your life better. But true realization comes from accepting the fact they never intended to make your life better to begin with. They only give a fuck about you when you use your vote, use your earnings, and use your ignorance to give them power. In the minds of government, in the minds of the bureaucracy, in the minds of the collective, you are a resource to be used and exhausted until you are no longer of value. You are a thing meant for manipulation. They beguile you with their programs and aid and assistance, and every single one of their schemes comes with a string attached. Surrender a little more of your rights in the name of safety and services. Give away your freedom. Attach some more strings. Listen to the con artists as they convince you that you have to let government handle things because you can't do it for yourself. String after string is attached until you are nothing more than a puppet. The ball game is about to start. Stand up and give your obeisance to the government, puppets. April 15th is coming up. Fill out those tax forms, puppets. The new school year is just around the corner. Sit down, puppets, and conform to our indoctrination. The worst part is, you allow the strings to attach not only to you, but you also condemn future generations with the same strings. And since they grow up knowing only those conditions, they are programmed to believe that is how things ought to be. Whatever you do, puppets, don't you dare ever question the bureaucracy. Don't you even think that you know better how to run your life. Don't ever think that there could be a better way. What's that? You say you're no puppet? Okay, Pinocchio. Prove it. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.